cover the final report on foreign interference in your recent article, "Here's One Easy Trick to Combat Foreign Political Interference in Our Media," at Canadian Dimension. You report, Mark, Justice Marie-Josée Hogue saying her commission has, quote, conducted a thorough and rigorous examination of foreign interference in Canada's electoral processes and democratic institutions. But more threatening, according to Madam Hogue, is that, quote, information manipulation, whether foreign or not, poses the single biggest risk to our democracy. It is, she says, an existential threat. Well, Mark, do you find it strange that such an exhaustively thorough examination of foreign interference would return as its primary concern something, quote, foreign or not?
Well, I think that, you know, with the exhaustive research that she did to fill seven volumes and not finding much foreign influence on our politicians, she obviously found something a lot bigger that she, you know, felt she had to warn us all about, which was foreign-owned and foreign-funded disinformation and misinformation, not just directed to our politicians, but to all of us. And having studied our news media for decades now, I have to agree with that. This is a huge problem, which most Canadians don't seem to be aware of.
Well, is she going off reservation then by focusing on something other than the direction of this inquiry as set by the government in the first place?
Well, she may well have, but she might have, caught on to something that we need to pay more attention to. You know, our largest newspaper chain has been owned for the past 15 years, 98% now, by U.S. hedge funds. And it's been passed around between a couple of different hedge funds. But the hedge fund that has owned it since 2016, Chatham Asset Management of Chatham, New Jersey, is owned by a fellow who is an actual Trump ally. And there was a big investigation in the States the first time Trump was elected about this so-called catch and kill scheme by the National Enquirer, which Chatham also owned, that would buy up the stories of whistleblowers, women who had been molested by Trump, and then not publish them at all. And I believe that Trump's lawyer, Michael Cohen, actually went to prison for a few years over this, as it was illegal election expenses that they paid off these women with. So there's no doubt that Chatham is a very rightward leaning company, and even though it's not supposed to exercise control over Canadian media, which is supposed to be limited to 25% foreign ownership and control, it would require an almost complete suspension of disbelief to think that they don't have any control of the content that we're being fed by Post Media, which has grown now since its origins in 2010. They took over the Sun Media chain in 2015, which was at the time the second largest chain in Canada. They took over the Brunswick News chain in 2022, which dominates the province of New Brunswick. And then just last year, they took over the Saltwire Network chain, which dominates the rest of Atlantic Canada. And they've kept making layoffs and cutbacks, closures of newspapers to keep making the massive debt payments, which are owed to the hedge funds. This is the business that they're in. is debt collection and propaganda, now not journalism. So they've been replacing a lot of the local news coverage with propaganda for big oil, which Post Media has had a long standing relationship with the Canadian Association of News, petroleum producers, to run advertorials disguised as news promoting pipelines and things like this. So obviously, Madam Justice Hogue has caught on to a very serious problem here, which we need to pay more attention to.
Well, Mark, haven't we as Canadians and over many administrations paid a lot of attention to this? I recall, in the last century when I went to communications school, the Canadian content rules emerged in radio play, and they were very strict, and they exist even yet and have been strengthened by state broadcasters even to higher percentiles. You say 25% of ownership is the of foreign ownership is the limit in Canadian media. How is it possible then that we can have the biggest media company in the country 98% controlled in foreign hands?
Well, they have very sharp lawyers, obviously. the limit was first pushed by lawyers who figured out that you could, in addition to 25% foreign ownership, you could have 25% of the remaining 75% owned by a foreign holding company, which raised the foreign ownership to about 42% or something. But then they got an even better idea, which was to form a publicly traded company with two types of shares. And the shares issued to foreigners would be called variable voting shares. And so their voting power would be limited to keep them under the 25% limit, if you believe that even 25% doesn't allow you to control a company, I've got a bridge that I'd like to sell you, and the bridge is in New Jersey.
Yeah, clearly the Canadian rules are not so much about the parsing the ownership of companies as in controlling what the message of those media companies is. So, as you say, there's no guarantee that 25 or 30% ownership in a company doesn't mean that you have 100% control of its editorial policy.
Yes, and most countries have laws limiting foreign ownership of their news media. Ironically enough, though, not including the United States, which takes press freedom so seriously that they allow unlimited foreign ownership of newspapers. And as a result, some Canadians like Lord Thompson of Fleet and Lord Black of Cross Harbour, Conrad Black, have been among some of the largest owners of newspapers in the U.S. And there hasn't been much scholarly research done on this, but one of the few studies that was done was of Canadian-owned newspapers in the U.S. and their coverage of the Quebec independence referendum back in the previous millennium, which they indeed found was influenced to a considerable extent by foreign ownership. So again, this is just another clue that we need to start taking this a bit more seriously.
Well, it's one thing, like in the States, there still is some measure, although they've suffered the media concentration as Canada has. We used to call it media concentration, then it became media convergence. This was a big issue back at the turn of the century in this country when, as you described, these media conglomerates were gobbling up all the competition. It's gotten much, much worse now. I would argue, though, that foreign ownership wouldn't be such a big deal in this country if there was still a variety of sources and editorial points of view available.
Yes, this is the problem, and there's a lack of diversity of viewpoints. There are very few left-leaning newspapers in Canada anymore. The problem with concentration was that the ownership of the newspaper industry in Canada became about as concentrated as it could get back in the 1990s when Conrad Black owned most of it. Convergence at the Millennium took that to a new level by converging the ownership of newspapers with the ownership of television networks. Black sold most of his newspapers to Canwest Global Communications, which owned the Global Television Network. The Globe and Mail partnered with the CTV network as CTV Globe Media, which didn't work out very well. The Globe and Mail filed for divorce about a decade later. Canwest ended up in ashes, in bankruptcy, having taken on so much debt, $4 billion in debt to buy the Southam newspapers and various other assets. The only place that convergence really worked was in Quebec, where Quebecor owned the, they bought the Groupe Vidéotron media conglomerate at the Millennium, which owned both of the cable systems in Quebec, but also the TVA network. Even Quebecor divested that, or at least the newspapers, the Sun Media chain, which I mentioned earlier, which they sold to Post Media in 2015. So convergence was a bit of a bust, but it left the newspaper industry here in ruins because, like I say, the largest chain as a result now was bought out of bankruptcy by the hedge funds using the debt which they had acquired at pennies on the dollar, as little as 5 to 10 cents, according to some reports. And a lot of it was high interest debt, bonds which Ken West had issued when it was trying to stay afloat, that carried interest rates of 12 or 13%. Well, if you buy bonds that pay 12 or 13% for 5 to 10 cents on the dollar, you're getting an annual return of 130 to what, 260% a year, which is a pretty good rate of return. All you have to do is keep the company alive and making the interest payments, which they've only been able to do by making such massive cuts, like I say, and replacing much of the original news coverage with propaganda, political and oil propaganda. And then more recently, of course, they've used a lot of their political power to prevail on the federal government to bail them out, starting in 2019 with the 5-year, $595 million bailout, which was only supposed to last for 5 years. And if they couldn't make a successful transition to sustainable hybrid print online publications in that period, even they admitted they probably never would. But of course, it was renewed after 5 years and has been extended until 2029 at last count. And then, of course, they got this bright idea about persuading Ottawa to order Google and Facebook to subsidize them, which they figured would run into more than $300 million a year. But unfortunately, Facebook, their owner Meta, wouldn't play along with this, and Google set a limit of $100 million a year. So that's all they got from the Online News Act. But it's probably enough to keep Post Media going for the foreseeable future. And as I mentioned in one of my columns about the Hoag Report, we're basically paying them now to feed us a right-wing propaganda, as the salaries of journalists in Canada are almost completely paid by subsidies from Ottawa or Google or provincial subsidies from Quebec for those newspapers that are headquartered there.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Mark Edge. Mark is a Canadian journalist, author, and academic. He is the author of 8 books spanning a quarter of a century of media disaster, I would say, in this country. They include The News We Deserve, The Transformation of Canada's Media Landscape, The Post-Media Effect, How Vulture Capitalism is Wrecking Our News, and his most recent, Tomorrow's News, How to Fix Canada's Media. We're talking in and around his recent article at Canadian Dimension. Here's one easy trick to combat foreign political interference in our media. Well, when I was a young lad, Mark, I worked at the Times columnist newspaper here in Victoria. In those days, there was 2 newspapers, the Times and the Colonist. They merged into one paper. They were then somewhere along the way bought out. They are a part now of Post Media. But what we lose with that, of course, with that convergent and the firing of all the journalists, half in that case, but as we've seen more and more across the nation, is that the content, the editorial content, becomes more and more laser focused, as and the people still left alive, if they're not AI robots writing this content, are ever more fearful of losing their sinecure, and so are more apt to regurgitate and repeat whatever the message of those, the ownership of that last remaining media organ, sends down the line.
Yes, and the biggest problem is that there's not much news coverage at all, so people don't really know what's going on. Luckily, we have this thing now called the internet, which allows for very low-cost publication and distribution. So we've been seeing a proliferation of online news sources. The problem is that the big media in Canada, they didn't like that very much. So, you know, they wanted to try and prevent that as much as possible with the Online News Act. And they've certainly been successful since Meta has dropped news from its Facebook and Instagram platforms. It's more difficult than ever to get the news online. So there have been some attempts at forming new types of networks. For example, Canadian Dimension, for which I write my media column. I'm probably the last media columnist left in Canada. Canadian Dimension has hooked up with a network of progressive news websites called Unrigged. So if you go to unrigged.ca, you can see just the type of journalism which you won't see in the mainstream media in Canada anymore.
Yeah, well, when I hear something like what Justice Marie-Josée Hogue said, in that misinformation and disinformation pose an even greater threat to democracy, that sends off alarm bells for me, because this is exactly the language that was used to control online content and is still being used, not only in this country, but in other English-speaking and Western nations, where everything is disregarded as fake news or whatever, and is attacked, even so much so as we're seeing journalists being arrested and so forth, especially for coverage of things like Israel.
Yes, and it's very important for the, you know, the powers that be to control the narrative and to set the agenda in the news media. And part of what's contributing to their ability to do this is not just the diminution in the ranks of journalists, but also in the corresponding proliferation of the ranks of public relations operatives. A few decades ago, the ratio of reporters to PR people was about 1 in 4. Well, with the, you know, decimation of the ranks of journalists, many of whom have gone into public relations, working for corporations. Apparently, the ratio of journalists to public relations people is now something more like 1 to 14. So journalists are very much outnumbered, and small news media outlets in particular don't have the resources to resist threats of lawsuits, slap suits, as they're called, strategic lawsuits against public participation. And so quite often, rather than incur legal costs and possibly large damage awards, we'll just go ahead and delete that content or not even cover it in the first place. This is called a libel chill, and is another important phenomenon that not enough attention is being paid to.
Well, Mark, in your article, you quote C. Ann Hollifeld in a 1999 report she put out, or helped put out at least, on foreign ownership issues from a Canadian perspective. And she says at one point in that paper, quote, the point of this is out of fear that foreign owners would use outlets that they control to manipulate public opinion in times of national crisis. What we've seen going on in this country since the Trump's elevation, do you regard that as a moment of national crisis for Canada when he is talking about making of Canada a 51st state and media outlets, as you mentioned, are allies to the new president, are forming the kind of editorial content Canadians are reading?
Well, it certainly is an existential crisis if we're being threatened with being subsumed into our much larger neighbor. And this seems to be at least having the effect of focusing some national attention on the problem. And with Madam Justice Hogue's report alerting us to the perils of misinformation and disinformation, I'm hoping that this will at least have the effect of wresting foreign ownership and control from our largest newspaper chain, which I've been advocating since 2019 when the federal subsidies were first introduced. I can't see the wisdom of paying foreign-owned news media to propagandize us. And I don't think it's unreasonable to require that if we're going to subsidize our news media, that they at least be Canadian-owned and controlled.
Yeah. It seems to me, Mark, that this inquiry that the government put together and spent so much resources on, and 7 volumes emanate from it, the foreign interference in federal electoral processes and democratic institutions being its operative title. But they focusing on media seems to be a little bit of a red herring to me. If she, Madam Hogue, couldn't find foreign interference in the political process in Canada, I would argue she wasn't looking very hard, or she was looking in the wrong place when we see the kind of influence the United States has and the kind of influence Israel has on the on Canadian policies. And when it comes to foreign policy issues, such as in Ukraine and the Middle East.
Yes, well, I think the concern which prompted her investigation was the foreign influence on individual politicians. But what she found was that that's not prevalent so much as the foreign influence on all of us, through our news media, which portrays an image of the world to the liking of the powers that be, and makes, certain policies such as, support for the state of Israel just seem like common sense, when actually it should be very much questioned. As a result, there needs to be more of a diversity of opinion in Canada. We all seem to be herded like sheep to certain conclusions. And I think that what she's warning about in terms of misinformation and disinformation is something that should be examined in a separate inquiry into the media itself, which is badly overdue. You know, Ottawa has been putting together this patchwork quilt of subsidies and, you know, forced subsidies without really any seeming coherent strategy or media policy. I think we need to have a new royal commission into the media to chart a way forward that's a little bit more coherent before we start, especially before we start taking any precipitous steps, such as the current Conservative Party leader has threatened about defunding the media, especially the CBC. We need the CBC now more than ever. We need to increase its funding and increase funding for a diversity of news media, especially online, which is what I'm calling for in my new book, Tomorrow's News. I believe that a lot of the tax dollars that are being even now collected from big tech under the Online Streaming Act and the Digital Services Tax should go to a fund to increase independent journalism in Canada, which wouldn't be distributed so much by bureaucrats in Ottawa or even politicians, but by Canadians themselves through a voucher system, which would give us each several hundred dollars a year to spend on the news media of our choice, and would be funded in large part by the windfall profits that are being made by corporations, not just foreign corporations like Google and Meta, but wholly owned Canadian corporations like our big telecoms, which are making outrageous profits by charging us through the nose for internet access. They're making about 50% profit margins on internet service provision, which at latest count is raking in something like $16 billion a year. Well, a 5% levy to claw back some of those windfall profits, such as the online streamers are now being required to pay under the Online Streaming Act, in which the cable companies have been required to pay for years on their cable television revenues to fund Canadian broadcast content. Well, a 5% levy on ISP revenues would be something like $800 million a year. And put together with the $100 million a year that Google is supplying and revenues, like I say, under the Online Streaming Act, which are already flowing, and the digital services tax on those companies which are monetizing our data, a fund to fund journalism in Canada could come to well over $1 billion a year. And as I state in my book, could bring a new golden age of journalism in Canada.
Well, one would hope that somehow I feel we'd end up paying for our own propaganda once again. Again, the author is Mark Edge. The article is "Here's One Easy Trick to Combat Foreign Political Interference in Our Media." You can find it at CanadianDimension.com. I highly recommend you go there. And my first guest, Judy Reaver, her article appears at CanadianDimension.com as well. Mark's latest book, as he mentioned, is Tomorrow's News: How to Fix Canada's Media. Thanks a lot for coming on today and telling us a bit about it, Mark.
It's my pleasure.
And thanks too to Judy. That's all I got for this week. Until the next time.
Moscow, Tokyo, New York. Guerrilla Radio is everywhere. Online at guerrilla-radio.com. Everywhere, all the time.